fans. I'm Mark Morrell, your host for Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. We're going to be doing another episode review from Season 8. Can't wait to do this. This is the third episode in Season 8, and I've got to have my co-host, Greg Tyler. So welcome, Greg.
Hello, Mark Morrell. Hello, Voltron fans and listeners around the universe. It's great to be back.
Yes. This is only going to be the two of us. How's that?
Oh, my goodness. It's kind of crazy. It'll be like crickets chirping or lions growling. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. But, you know, this episode that we're about to review, I like to call it the Scooby and Shaggy episode.
There are some moments, aren't there?
Yeah. I mean, you remember how Crystal Venom?
Uh-huh.
That was kind of a scary episode, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This one has a very similar feeling.
Yes, and it has a little bit more corridor action, too, which brings back memories of Scooby-Doo.
Right. There's some suspenseful times during this episode. So
yeah. But, you know, as tempting as it might have been to the writers to go there, to go full on Scooby-Doo, where they're running in and out of different doorways, they didn't go there. You know, many kudos to them for that.
Yeah, that has been done a few times in many different shows. So, yeah, we didn't have to give that reference.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is an interesting episode. It's called The Prisoner's Dilemma. And I said this when we did our full Season 8 review, that there was one thing that I had wondered about in previous episodes, if it was going to come back and if they were going to conclude that part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And this one does that. So, you know, when we're talking about Ranveig's beast.
Right, right.
That was something I was glad they were able to close that part of the story up.
I got to tell you, and we'll get into this, of course, but as we go through the episode, but the creature is more than just a creature. The creature has a mind and intelligence, and it really intrigues me the more that I rewatch this episode, what this creature might actually have been besides a Galra killer. There's a lot more to it than just, you know, teeth and nastiness.
Yeah, and we can get into that more as we get closer to that part. I did want to mention the fact that, of course, everybody knows you and I are going to VoltCon later this year.
Mm-hmm.
So October 19th and 20th in Indianapolis. And if you want to get more information about VoltCon, you can go to voltcon.org. And that's VoltCon.org.
That's right. I say Volt, you say?
VoltCon?
Nice.
So we've already announced the shakeups are going to be there. You and I will be there. Jeremy Okorie will be there. And we heard that there will be an announcement coming soon about more good stuff.
Yes. And to clarify, Mark and I are not involved in organizing the con at all. We're just very happy that the con is happening. We're happy to promote them on the podcast. And we're very happy and honored to be guests. So we hope to have some of our friends that we've met and friends that we've not yet join us and say hi at the con.
And you can also follow VoltCon on Facebook too. All right, let's get into Voltron Legendary Defender Season 8, Episode 3, The Prisoner's Dilemma.
All right.
This was written by Eric Bogue, directed by Eugene Lee. The additional voices in this, we have Ray Chase as Warlord Lon.
Awesome.
Yeah, he has a lot of lines in this, by the way. So this was a very big part for this episode. So congrats to Ray Chase on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Brian T. Delaney plays the sentry, and I also think he plays Warlord Lon's second in command.
Okay.
And then Zara Fazal plays Razavi. Anna Graves plays Leif's daughter. AJ Locasio plays Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
And Nolan North plays Iverson.
All right.
There is a segment where the MFEs all chant together all at the same time. So if there wasn't a specific time where you heard Leif's daughter or Razavi, it's because they all gave the response, copy that or something like that, all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep.
All right. So the first scene, we're at a Galra base We find out that this is Planet Riker.
Yes, not to be confused with Number One from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yes.
It's actually spelled in the subtitles R-Y-K-E-R. And in Star Trek, the commander's name was R-I-K-E-R, although in earlier drafts of the writer's Bible, it was spelled with a Y. So there you go.
Okay. Do you think there was some kind of connection there?
I don't know, but Riker's a name that you don't run across too often, so maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. So in the beginning here, an alarm blares and a soldier's looking at a console screen and he gasps. And Lieutenant Lon says, "What's happening?" And the soldier says, "Six hostile ships have entered the system, sir." Lieutenant Lon says, "Prepare armaments and power the satellites." How did they make it past initial detection? What do you think that initial detection is?
Well, I think we learn later in the episode what it probably is, which would be the satellites themselves.
Okay. All right. That's what I was thinking, too. I was thinking it had to be the satellites because somewhere, you know, we get an explanation later.
Yeah.
Okay. So on the main screen, Keith appears and says, "This is the Voltron Coalition. Lay down your arms and..." And immediately, Lieutenant Lon says, "Open fire!" So all the ground cannons fire on the Lions and the Atlas, and the Atlas activates their particle beam shield. Lance says, "Well, that didn't take long." Hunk says, "Fighters launching, 6 o'clock low." Keith says, "Remember, shoot them down if needed, but try to avoid collateral damage on the ground." So you get the sense that they really don't want to hurt anybody here, right?
Yes, and it's nice to be reminded that the Voltron Paladins are the good guys.
Yeah, so they're really trying to bring these guys to their side. They're not trying to, you know, capture them and keep them as prisoners.
Right.
On the Atlas Bridge, Captain Shiro says, "Shield status." Iverson says, "Holding steady at 95%, but the ground cannons have us targeted." Shiro says, "Let's give the Lions some backup. Adjust our heading down to 1.05.
I would really love to know what all those numbers are. I mean, obviously, it's just random gibberish, and I don't mean the band. But, you know, they do this. It's like 1.0. What the heck does that mean?
Oh, well. Yeah. I'm not a navigator, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Karan says, "Adjusting course." Shiro says, "Lock on to the ground cannons." Iverson says, "We have weapons lock." Shiro says, "Fire." Several cannons below are hit. Now we see James Griffin in his MFE cockpit. Iverson saying, "Prepare for launch. Once you're locked in, you've got 3 seconds. Anticipate, but don't jump the gun." Now all the pilots in unison say, "Copy."
Yeah, so to follow up on what you said earlier, I'm guessing they didn't bring back the Kincaid and Leif Stotter voice actors just for one word.
Oh, they brought Leif Stotter's.
Oh, they did? Voice. I missed that when you went through the additional voices. Okay, sorry.
Yeah,
sorry
the only one we didn't mention was Kincaid.
Okay, gotcha.
Bumper Robinson?
Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah, so that was the only one. You see Kincaid in this episode, but he never speaks.
Okay.
So the MFEs take off and approach the base. And in the caption, you see it says Griffin, but this line sounds like Shiro. Did you happen to notice that?
I noticed there was one line that seemed to be wrong in terms of the attribution. I can't remember which one it was. That might have been the one.
It sounds like Shiro saying, "All right, team, we've got to clear a path for the rebel ships. Let's move." But the caption says it's Griffin. It would make sense if it was Griffin, but... I don't know. It sounded a lot like Shiro.
Well, you know what? Let me revisit right now. Because we can. Through the power of Netflix. Thank you, Netflix. And DreamWorks Animation. And World Events Productions.
And we might as well thank Atlas Oceanic Sound. Might as well thank Studio Mir. Anybody else you want to thank?
Yeah.
All those wonderful voice actors and voice directors and production assistants and... storyboard artist. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to thank my ears if I can hear this line in just a moment here. That sounds like Griffin to me.
Oh, okay. I'd like to get an expert in on this.
Yeah, I think it's Griffin. And it sounds like it could be either. It sounds very, very similar to Shiro's voice in that particular line.
Right.
But in the foreground is one of the MFE fighters. So that suggests to me that it's supposed to be one of the pilots talking, and it would be naturally Griffin among those pilots. So I think it's a Griffin voice.
Okay. So like it says, it is Griffin, and it's all right, team. We've got to clear a path for the rebel ships. Let's move. So the rebel ships come in behind. The bay door on the rebel ship opens, and we see Matt standing there.
Yeah, well, it's not just Matt.
I know.
Yeah, we got Nima and N7.
Yes, this was pretty cool.
Yes, and N7 was only named in one of the subtitles throughout the entire program, as I recall. But N7 is the robot, the AI, as Lauren Montgomery clarified, who happens to be an item of sorts with Matt Holt. So this is pretty cool, and it's cool to see Nima with them.
Yeah. Now, when they do the caption of when N7 speaks, it just says computer, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Nima doesn't speak in this one, but you see her in like two shots.
Right.
All three jump down toward the base. Keith says, Paladins, let's take out their reinforcements. So Blue Lion freezes shut the opening where the fighters were coming out, and a couple of fighters crash into it, exploding. Green Lion uses the special plant power to bring down another fighter. Red Lion uses the mouth ray to burn through parts of the base. Black Lion uses the mouth blade to knock out a few more fighters and cannons.
Woohoo!
Now Lieutenant Lon says, Damage report. The soldier says, We've suffered little to no casualties, sir, but half the fleet has been rendered inoperable.
I think it's interesting, and I know that they're pointing this out probably as writers to just emphasize, you know, few people got hurt, but I wouldn't expect the Galra's first response to be, we've lost almost nobody. In a rip it saw victory or death mentality, I don't even know that the Galra would necessarily have even cared what the casualty report was right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if I usually hear damage report, I'm thinking, okay, we've got 10 cannons that are down, or, you know, 5 fighters have been knocked down or something like that. You know, I wouldn't be expecting to hear the casualty report right there.
Yeah. And I wouldn't expect any Galra commander to really ask either.
I really care about how many people we've lost.
Yes, yes. Those weak fools.
Victory or death.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. So after he hears the report, Lieutenant Lon's teeth are clenched in rage. It's almost like he's mad that they haven't taken out some of his own men.
Doggone it, they neither victory nor death.
Right. It's like, how can you give us something else other than victory or death? That's not cool.
That's right. Only the Sith deal in absolutes. Oh, I mean Galra, yeah.
Yeah. So Matt and N7 make it to the roof of the base. N7 gets to a console and touches the screen, and in that computer AI voice that we know of, pulse emitters set. Detonation in 3, 2, 1. Now they show a split screen of Matt and Nima. And then you see 3 purplish circles cover the base with a pulse sound. And it appears it was an EMP shutting down the power.
Yes, like the pulse projectiles that the MFEs used in Season 7.
Cool.
Yep.
So the soldier says, all power is down across the base. Only the emergency power generators remain active. Lieutenant Lon says, what about the satellites? Soldier says, they should still be operational. Lon says, good.
I'm just glad that N7 is shielded from EMPs herself, or itself.
Yeah, I kind of wonder how that works.
Yeah, well, you know, she's a rebel, or it's a rebel, so, you know.
Or Johnny Five is alive.
Oh, there you go.
Mm-hmm. We see a shot of the Atlas, and it pans up to see a barrage of lasers coming from space. There are explosions all around. The crew is grunting. Shiro says, does anyone have eyes on where these lasers are coming from? Pidge says, I'm not seeing anything on my scanners. Trying to locate point of origin now. Allura says, I'm on it. Blue Lion points up into space and emits a sonic scan. Allura says, I've got visual on 2 cloaked cannon satellites.
So you gotta wonder, are the satellites low enough in orbit that they're still in the atmosphere so that sound can reach them? Because sound ain't going anywhere in space. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I would think it would be. I would think they'd be low enough for that.
Yeah, that works. It works a lot better than the sonic charges in the Star Wars prequels, which were very much in space.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool.
So Hunk says, how did we miss those? Pitch says, it looks like we wormholed right past them. So going back to what we were saying before, it looks like they missed the satellites because they wormholed past them. And it looks like initial detection wasn't there because they had wormholed past that.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool, actually. They both got blindsided.
Yeah. All right. Keith says, Paladins, on me. Form Voltron. And then they have the Voltron formation sequence.
Oh, yeah. We've never seen that before, have we? But in all honesty, no matter how many times they show it on this show, or Voltron Force, or Voltron the Third Dimension, or Voltron Defender of the Universe, it's always, always awesome. I always get the little chills down the spine like, oh yeah, they're forming Voltron!
Does the chills make that high-pitched voice?
Yes, that's it. It makes me think of, what's that Prince song? Where he gets all high-pitched, you don't have to be rich to be my guy. You know that whole thing where he's singing that song? But yeah. Yeah, but it's not Prince that does that to me. It's former Voltron.
Yeah, I think it was Kiss was the name of the song.
That's the name of the song. Thank you.
So Voltron heads up to one of the cloak cannons. Both Keith and Lance put their Bayards in and turn them, opening up the giant booster wings on Voltron's back.
Oh, yeah. Those are so cool.
And then the sonic boom. So Voltron starts quickly darting around all the cloaked satellites, cuts a hole through the center with two swords, and a satellite blows up behind Voltron.
Yeah.
This all happens very quick, doesn't it?
It does. In fact, it's not really till the very end of that whole thing that I realize, oh, Voltron's got the two swords. Oh, yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, it happens very quickly. In fact, Shiro's already saying, great job making quick work of the satellites, Paladins. You see a split screen and they're all smiling. We've successfully gained control of the base. So now we see images of the Rebels and the Atlas crew, including Ramel, rounding up the Galra and tending to the wounded.
Yeah, I noticed that Olia is one of them. She had commanded the Rebel ship that we had seen Matt hold an N7 on in prior seasons, where they attacked the Zyforge cannon at Tech, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think Captain Olia was the one that was piloting the ship that Matt and N7 and Naima jumped off of?
Well, I guess somebody had to fly it. Good point. Yeah. Good point. There was also a Tal'Jerian scene there. And there's this very distinctive-looking Unalu. I don't remember the first time we saw this character. We don't get a name for this character, but it's an Unalu wearing a Garrison uniform. And I think the Unalu is female. And she has this headband, around her head, obviously. And I've seen her in the background in several episodes. I don't know if there's a backstory for her that we'll never really, you know, we never got to learn about on the show, but she's very visually distinctive. And every time I see her, I wonder what her story is.
Hmm. I don't think we'll ever get that.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. So Shiro, the five Paladins, and Matt appear on the bridge of the base, and the MFE crew is already there. Griffin, referring to Lon, says, this one says he's the leader. And then Lon turns to face them. Hunk says, whoa, ho, ho. And he walks up to Lon. He says, holy Kaltenecker. What are you doing here? It's me, Hunk, remember? Paladin of the Yellow Lion? And he gets no response. We work together? Lieutenant Lon says, I remember. And Keith says, wait, you know this guy? Hunk says, yeah, from the Omega Shield. Oh, that's right. You were on a space road trip with your mom? Yeah, Keith. This is our friend, Lieutenant Lon. Lieutenant Lon says, it's Warlord Lon now, and you and I are not friends.
Wow. That's about the closest that Lon ever gets to saying, get off of my lawn.
Yeah. So we were calling him Lieutenant Lon up until now because we didn't know he was Warlord Lon yet.
That's right.
So now he's Warlord Lon.
That's a very popular title up among the Galra these days.
Yeah, they they were commanders right up until the time that Galra started fighting each other, and now they're all warlords.
Yep.
Hunk says, I guess I thought we just bonded by working together as a team to fix the Omega Shield and save your planet, you know? A Galra-occupied planet, no less? We saved it. It's cool. No big deal.
Hmm.
Warlord Lan says, Sendak only attacked the Omega Shield after we pledged loyalty to Voltron. Then you disappeared and left us vulnerable to more attacks. I vowed to never let that happen again. Alora says, it was not our intention to be gone for so long, but we're here now. And Lan says, to claim victory over us? Alora says, no. Shiro says, we didn't come here to argue. Warlord Lan, we're asking you to join the Voltron Coalition to help provide stability to the universe. Lan says, what's the alternative? What did you think Shiro was going to say here?
I didn't think long enough, honestly, the first time or any other time that I've watched it to think, well, what would I imagine Shiro to have said? I did not imagine him to say what he wound up saying at the very end of this next sentence.
Yeah, I kind of thought he was going to be a little bit more open-minded about offering alternatives.
Yeah.
And there isn't any, really.
This Shiro, I mean, all the Shiros that we've seen, I mean, when I say all the Shiros, we've really kind of gotten three Shiros in this series. There's the original Shiro in the first two seasons. There's Caron Shiro in the following four half seasons. And then this new Shiro that I've sort of nicknamed internally as Fusion Shiro, the merging of Shiro, the original Shiro's mind with the Caron body. And they're all kind of no-nonsense, you know, get-it-done kind of people. But I've always had the impression that the original Shiro was kind of kinder and gentler, you know what I mean? A little more diplomatic in the words, and not quite so much from here. Although, what he's saying is pretty much true, so why sugarcoat it, you know?
Right. And don't forget, hashtag all my Shiros.
Nice.
So what he says is, if you want peace, if you want to end this war, there can be no alternative. So Lan says, you've attained victory, and I accept defeat. And Keith says, it doesn't have to be victory or death. I know it's the Galra way, but Lan says, and what if you know of the Galra? Keith says, my mother is Galra. She's a member of the Blade of Marmora. So am I. And Lan says, the mutinous blades have all but perished. Are they so diminished in numbers that they're forced to enlist a half-breed and his mommy?
Dang.
Keith just looks at him with consternation, and he never gets to respond to this.
Well, was he planning to? I wonder. What would he have said?
Oh, that was such a burn.
Yeah, it was. I really think that Keith has grown up to the point, I mean, and I don't mean he was a child before he had the trip through the Quantum Abyss and got to know his mother and all that. He wasn't a child, but he has matured significantly as a character. And I like to think that as much as he doesn't like, you know, as much as crazy as he got over Lance's barbs and stuff in earlier seasons, I don't think the Keith that exists now would necessarily have smarted off, even if he'd had the chance. What do you think?
Well, not now, but earlier on in the first or the second season, if you wanted to compare it to something, do you remember Back to the Future?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember how Marty McFly could never seem to not respond whenever anybody called him chicken?
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. It was like it switched something, and he had to respond to it. Well, in this case, anytime somebody says something like that to Keith, you would have kind of expected him in his early days to respond to that.
Right.
I mean, he was going up against Clizap. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
He was ready to fight Clizap.
Good point.
So yeah, I think he's grown.
Yeah.
So we hear beeping sounds. And this is the reason why Keith doesn't do any response to this, is because Pidge says, guys, I'm getting an incoming communication. So Shiro says, patch it through. Now the screen on the base bridge opens up and they hear this message. Yordam, Bering, Exus. Yordam, Bering, Exus. and it starts fading. Yordam, Bering, Exus.
You do that very well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, your human accent is a little thick, but other than that, you're really good at it.
Lan says, it's an emergency protocol built into the sentries when they're under distress. And he looks Keith's way and says, has your Voltron coalition attacked them as well? Keith says, no, we didn't. Shiro says, Pidge, see if you can reopen the hailing frequency. I'm trying, but no response. I'm locating the transmission's origin, but the EMPs we set off have done a number on the communication systems. Then you hear rapid beeping and Pidge looks up. Huh? We got a comm signature. The screen shows a ship, and she says to Lan, do you recognize this ship? Lan says, yes, it's Clytax V3. It's one of the 15 ships I sent on an assignment 6 Phoebes ago. They all disappeared. We assumed them dead.
Well, obviously, from the silhouette of that Galra cruiser, it's definitely the Clytax V3, because it couldn't have been the Clytax V4.
I don't know how you tell the difference.
That's what I mean. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like in Star Trek when you see a Klingon ship. You know, it's a stock model. They don't change the markings because no one can read Klingon. Well, there are people who probably can, but I don't even recall seeing any Galra markings on the cruisers to even suggest that they have individual names. But that Lan, there must be a reason why he's a warlord. He could tell that stuff apart. So there you go.
As soon as I heard this, I was like, okay, 15 ships went out. If there's only one there, it could be Vehicle Voltron.
Ah, I thought the same thing when I heard 15. I'm like, oh, yeah? Or maybe not.
We're going to see Vehicle Voltron.
And he's run by the Galra.
So, Captain Obvious, I mean Keith, says, it looks like they're not dead after all. We need to get out there. Shiro, how long before the Atlas is ready to launch again? I mean, you got to admit, that was obvious, right? It looks like they're not dead after all.
Right, exactly. I mean, it could be if it's just a Galra sentry, maybe they're dead. But, you know, I mean, they got to get there at least. That much is obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those Babylon 5 moments. As much as I love Babylon 5, the show is chock full of expository dialogue. Well, what's going on in this sector? How should we react? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Because they couldn't afford to do a lot of what they had to tell about in dialogue. And this was one of those exposition moments that they just couldn't really get around. So how do you present that in a way that doesn't sound like Captain Obvious is a challenge.
Lan said, we assumed them dead. Which means we're not going to go after him, right?
Yeah, victory or death, come on.
Yeah, so a little bit later on, though, when he's looking at the destruction and everything, it seems like he has another idea in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he did care whether or not they were dead or not.
Yeah.
I don't know, we'll see what happens when we get to that scene.
Yep.
So, Shiro says, hours. We still need to process all the Galra and prepare the planet to continue operating on its own. This is our mission. We need to see this through. Keith said, then Voltron will go. Lan says, Voltron is going to save the Galra? My fleet would never believe Voltron was there to help. They'd fight you until their last breath. And Keith says, that's why you're coming with us.
Ha ha, love it.
So Voltron heads out into the greenness of space and disappears. Ooh. I say greenness because it was slightly green color there as they were going into that sonic boom.
Yeah, I'm assuming that that's a hyperspace jump or something. I keep going back to, even though they don't really talk about, you know, they rarely mention, you know, hyperspace when they're not talking about wormholes. They just go places. In the first episode, I remember Blue Lion being chased by that Galra cruiser out to Kerberos. And there are all those cool starry streaks and all that, which in sci-fi circles usually means some kind of hyperspace jump. So go Voltron.
Yeah. Voltron's got all kinds of cool, you know, thrusters and wing combinations now.
Yep.
All right. So Lan is in Black Lion with Cosmo growling to keep Lan subdued. So Keith says to him, what was this fleet's mission when they left? Lan says they were out gathering munitions. And Allura on the comm says, weapons? Were you buying or stealing them? Lan says, "The Galra Empire is at war with itself. We do what we have to survive." Alora's cockpit now, we're focused on her, and now Lan is on the comm. "But if you must know why, they were salvaging weapons from an abandoned Galra base." Now we see a split screen with Alora and Pidge. Pidge says, "I have visual." Now Voltron stops in a field of debris in space, and the ship they're looking at just seems to be floating. Keith says, "Everyone, stay alert." Lance says, "What happened here?" Hunk says, "Warlord Lan, didn't you say there were 15 cruisers? Where are the rest of them?" Pitch says, "I'm not detecting any signs of life or biorhythms on the closest two ships, but there are some signals coming from the ship at the end." And on the comm, Lan says, "That's Clytax V3, where the call came from." So Keith opens up a channel and says, "Hailing Galra cruiser Clytax V3. This is Keith, Paladin of the Black Lion of Voltron. Do you copy?"
Yeah, because you're totally going to get an answer from the Galra when you say, "Hi, we're Voltron."
Yeah, there's nothing but static hissing.
Yeah.
So now Lan speaks up and says, "This is Warlord Lan, your commander. Do you copy?" And they get an answer. It's the same thing they heard before. Yordam Bering Exus. Yordam Bering Exus.
Now, we should point out that even though, yes, the voice we hear says Exus is the last word, in the subtitles it's spelled E-X-U-S, which is the same spelling as one of the letters in the Altaian alphabet from the song that we had. So it may be sheer coincidence, or maybe this is just the Galra accent or something on an Altaian letter. Who knows? Just thought I'd point it out, being the dutiful nerd that I am.
And what do you call it when a word has the same spelling but two different pronunciations?
Gosh, what is that? A homonym?
Is that what that is?
I think it is. Same name, different, or is that same name, different meanings? I don't remember.
Same word spelling, but the two meanings have two different pronunciations.
Let's look it up. The power of Google. Here we go. Homonym. Noun, each of two or more words having the same spelling or pronunciation, but different meanings and origins.
Okay.
So that's a homonym. Same name is the translation of homonym. And there you go.
Okay. All right.
And that was your grammar or English lesson for the day, listeners. If you'd like to hear any more, let us know.
So whether you prefer to call it Exus or Exus.
All right.
Keith says, "Whoever's in there, we need to find them and get them out." Pitch says, "If I can access the ship's security network, we should be able to find out what happened here." So Keith unhooks Lan's restraints. And Keith says, "Paladins, Lan and I are going to head in first to make sure the entry point is safe. You guys jetpack in behind us." And all the paladins say at the same time, "Copy." So Cosmo zaps them both in. Keith says, "We're all clear." And then he says to Lan, "Open the airlock doors."
So what did you think about Lan not reacting in any way, shape, or form to the fact that Cosmo just teleported them?
Yeah, I would have thought he would have said something.
Yeah. Maybe Keith could have said, "It's a cosmic wolf."
Yeah, I mean, we've had that happen before, you know?
Right. It's like in Doctor Who. It's always a surprise when a new companion walks into the TARDIS and doesn't comment about it being bigger on the inside, because that's kind of a staple with the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess he just wants to be cool.
Yeah, he is pretty cool.
So the lions are staying on top of the ship while the paladins jetpack in. The airlock doors close behind them and they gather with Keith and Lan. Keith says, "Pidge, are you picking up any signals?" Pitch says, "There are multiple biorhythms, but they're intermittent, almost random. It doesn't make any sense." Keith says, "Okay, we'll need to split up to find any survivors. Hunk and Lance, clear the aft of the ship. I'll take the bow and work my way toward you. Pidge and Alora, take Lan to go through the security logs. Find out what happened here." Lan says, "I don't like taking orders on my own ship." Keith says, "Duly noted."
I love that. And he's actually pretty calm about it. I mean, it's like this shows how much Keith has grown. It's not just that he didn't react harshly when Lon called him a half-breed hanging out with his mommy. He was really calm and collected and just said, duly noted. It's kind of like his way of saying, to heck with you, but in a non-committal way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And to me, it's exactly what Shiro would have said if he was in that position.
Yeah, there you go.
So we start hearing creaky ship sounds as Keith shines a light and jetpacks through the ship. When he stops, Cosmo zaps in. Keith says, "Nobody's here." We see Lon put his hand on a console and it lights up. Lon sighs and says, "It's useless. The ship is in lockdown and the systems can't be rebooted. We'll need to contact my base for the security keys." Pidge, moving closer to the console, says, "Okay, or we could just do this." She brings up all the security logs by doing something on her arm hologram, and then the logs appear on the ship's screen. The first one they look at seems to blink every so often, and Alora says, "What's wrong with it?" Pidge says, "I'm not sure. It appears to be corrupted. Let me see if I can clean this up." Now, while Pidge does that, Lon jetpacks up to the window where he can see the destruction of all of his cruisers, and Alora follows him up. And Lon just says, "Everything I spent years fighting for, taken away in an instant." This is what I was talking about, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how he said, we assumed them all dead. And now he's here and he's seeing just how quickly they may have perished.
Yeah, and one thing that's fun about this, it's not fun to contemplate everybody under your command dying, but it shows that there, I mean, as we all have already learned throughout the seasons, there's more to Galra than victory and death. And it's nice to see that demonstrated here in Lon, who, despite him, you know, being very by the book and disliking the coalition and all that, there is another side to him. And it's nice to see that here.
Yeah. So Alora says, "I too have lost everything, my planet, my family. But when the Paladins arrived at the Castle of Lions..." And Lon snaps at her. He said, "You've never had to earn power. It's always been given to you. You're looking for something you once had. Security, peace, happiness. Those things have never been a part of a Galra soldier's life. You and I are not the same." That was pretty harsh, right?
Uh-huh. Yes, it was.
And Alora says, "You want something to call your own. Believe it or not, I understand that. But there are other ways to get it than through force. That's what the coalition is offering." And he doesn't say anything to that.
Right.
Now, on to Lance and Hunk with their flashlights and jetpacks. They're moving through another area of the ship.
Yep.
Hunk passes by the escape pods, and he says, "The escape pods are still here." Lance says, "Yeah, but the Galra aren't. Everyone is gone, but no one escaped in one of these things." Hunk says, "Ugh, that's creepy." They reach another room and open the door. They go in. Hunk starts whimpering. There's lots of debris and it's floating around, and he gets scared by a helmet with gunk all over it. Hunk says, "It's a massacre. We got to get out of here." He screams, kicks it. It hits Lance in the face and gets gunk all over his helmet visor. Lance is screaming, "It's all over me." Hunk says, "Oh, me too. Lance, get it off of me. Get it off. Ah." His visor starts to identify what it is. He says, "Oh, wait a minute. It's food goo."
Woohoo! Purple food goo, of course.
Lance says, "It's not coming off!" And he's screaming. Hunk says, "Oh, it's rotten food goo. Gross!" And he gags.
Yeah, he thinks it's blood or worse. And then he's almost as grossed out by the fact that it's, you know, rotten food goo.
That it's gone bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. We go back to Keith. He's finally finding that there are some bodies floating around. We don't know if they're like sentries, guards, or, you know, true Galra people. We can't really tell.
Yeah, at this point, right.
So Keith says, "What could have done this?" And he hears a distant bang, and he points his light in that direction. He hears whirring and banging continuing, and then he gasps as he sees a Galra sentry stuck in a door trying to get out. So what do you think that scene was meant to give you the idea about, that there's this sliding door and a Galra sentry is stuck in it?
I think it's just meant to be general creep out. I mean, it's not something you see every day, a robot that presumably knows how to walk. And of course, the gravity, we've not really mentioned that the gravity is generally disabled on the ship. Although on the bridge, it seems to have gravity, or at least they've got boots or something holding them on the floor. But I would assume that even a sentry would be able to navigate a ship in zero G. So to see it stuck in a doorway is not something you'd expect to see, I don't think. What do you think?
I think it was more to, you know, push the suspense even further, you know, like, ooh, I wonder what we're going to see next.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
So we go back to Pidge. Pidge looks like she found something in the security logs. Pidge says, I think I've got something, looking at the video of a Galra soldier. The soldier's here, but after the flash, he's gone. But now the shadow's on the other side of the screen. Alora says, perhaps it's from another soldier. Pidge says, I don't think so. That's less than a tenth of a second. Hold on. It looks like the trajectory of the lighting angles combined with the proximity of the soldier are distorting the shadow's shape. On the view screen, an image of a shadow transforms into the silhouette of a large monster.
Yes. What did you think of that, seeing that image appear like that?
That's some pretty fancy work to be able to get it to look exactly like that silhouette.
Yeah, I mean, from one camera, the camera, I mean, as far as we know, we're watching a 2D TV episode. But as far as we know, these cameras could be really high tech and be 3D images. And so if they were, then yes, you'd be able to reconstruct something like that to some point. Probably not a full silhouette.
And probably not that quickly.
Computers are pretty fast in the future, I would think. But you know, yeah. Ray tracing and all that stuff. But I will say that this scene reminds me of a Star Trek The Next Generation episode. It was called Identity Crisis. And Geordi and a past crew member of his from a previous ship before the Enterprise, they went into the holodeck and were watching 3D video footage of an away team mission that they had gone on years before. And they did the same thing where they found this weird shadow that was in the camera footage, and they did an analysis of it and got a partial silhouette of whatever it might have been that cast that shadow, because it was off camera. That was really creepy, because after that they showed them actually walking around it, because they're in the holodeck, you know, just sort of watching the away team footage as they're, you know, as they're standing in that environment. And they're walking around this really creepy looking 3D silhouette. And that's what this reminded me of. You see this really, really weird, creepy shape pop out of nowhere. It was pretty shocking.
Yeah. And did you ever see Iron Man 3?
I have not. No.
In Iron Man 3, Tony Stark is trying to figure out what had happened when, I guess it was an explosion that occurred, and he saw shadows on the wall. But he was missing the shadow of the person that apparently had caused the explosion.
Hmm.
And he had to, you know, take that whole scene and put it into a 3D hologram type thing. And he was able to look at it from different angles and figure out, you know, from what angle he was looking at, what exactly to find for the clue that he needed to find out what was causing it.
Okay, cool.
So, you know, another thing with shadows and different angles and stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah. So Lon says, what is that thing? Now, in a hallway, we've already moved on now. In a hallway, Lance and Hunk look like they've cleaned themselves off from their food goo gunk. Now they're floating and they hear a snarl and they gasp. Now, as sweat is dripping down their faces, Hunk and Lance peer around a corner with extremely wide eyes, their mouths hung open agape. A large monster with a long tail stands over a large crystal. It grabs the crystal. Light shoots up the arms and the monster grows larger.
Yeah, so this is presumably the crystal that powered the ship.
Right, and we see from the front, it's got human-looking arms on the inside, and two ginormous arms protruding from the shoulders.
Yeah, this thing it's very well armed.
It's scary looking.
Yeah, it is. It's Yeah, this is one of the creepier looking creatures on the show, to be sure.
It roars loudly, and Lance and Hunk blink several times and back away from the monster. And this is that part that I thought was the Scooby and Shaggy part.
Mm-hmm.
So Pitch comes over their comm and says, "Guys, be on the lookout for a giant deadly monster." The monster's looking at them now because it can hear what's coming over the comm.
Love it.
Allura says, "We believe it's what attacked the crew. Avoid at all costs." Pitch says, "Lance, Hunk, do you copy?" Now the monster roars and charges towards Hunk and Lance. They scream, and then their screaming dies off. And Pitch says, "Guys, are you okay?" No answer. "Lance? Hunk?" Now you see them both floating. Hunk's kind of upside down. Hunk says, "We're okay." And Lance whimpers. So they're okay. What do you think happened?
Looking back, I don't know what I thought happened. It's been too long. I mean, it's been, what, over a month since the episode first dropped. I really don't remember what I would have thought at that time. Do you remember?
I just wouldn't have figured that it would have let them go. You know, it just seems like it heard what was going on over the comm and it wanted to grab them. But It apparently wasn't after them.
Yeah.
So we see the monster dash from room to room. It stops in a control room and puts its hand on a console. The screen lights up. We see security footage from around the ship appearing. And then we hear him listening in on conversation with Pitch.
And isn't that something? I mean, this is a really creepy looking creature. And you know, up to this very moment, you know, even when it had its hands on the crystal, we could have just assumed that it had this instinctive drive to harness quintessence or something from the crystal, like an animal that had no sentience or intelligence. But here it's actually hacking a computer and listening in. So this creature has a mind.
Yes. And we find out even more later. So Pidge is saying, "Keith, we just contacted Lance and Hunk. They saw something. Be advised." So the monster turns to a video of Keith and Cosmo searching a room. In a control room, Lance and Hunk approach Pitch. Pitch says, Keith, can you hear me?" Hunk is panting. Allura says, "Are you two okay?" Lance says, "Yeah, we're fine. But we need to get out of here now." Pitch says, "Why? What happened?" Hunk says, "It was monster. Blue flash. Almost died. I got rotten food goo." And Lance says, "Wait, where's Keith?" So in a hallway, Keith and Cosmo approach a Galra sentry. Keith says, "Hello?" Cosmo growls. A Galra sentry at the end of the hallway appears to be saying, "What are you?" As they get closer, it says it again. "What are you?" Keith says, "My name is Keith, leader of Voltron, Paladin the Black Lion." "Wait, Yordam Bering Exis, is that you?" Sentry says, "Where are the rest of the Galra?" Keith says, "They're still on planet Riker. Why?" The sentry just replies, "Planet Riker." So the monster steps out from behind the drone and tosses it at Keith, who slices it in half with his Bayard sword.
So, yeah, I mean, this is once again the creature. It's not just, I mean, as if hacking into a computer and listening to communication traffic doesn't show intelligence. This thing was actually toying with Keith and deceiving Keith to figure out where other Galra were. And in asking Keith, "What are you?" it seems to be trying to figure out, is Keith Galra or not? It's probably a little confused.
Because he's half Galra.
Right.
Yeah. And then Keith and Cosmo fly away. The monster shoots a laser at them from its mouth. Cosmo disappears. Keith puts up a shield, blocks the blast, but it breaks the shield, pushes him hard against the back wall. He dodges another blast. And these blasts are putting holes in solid metal walls, by the way.
Yeah, and they shatter the shield.
Yeah.
I don't think we've seen that happen before, have we?
Yeah, these are pretty strong laser blasts.
Yeah, so that's pretty tough.
Yeah, so Keith tries to swing his sword at it, but it disappears. And it reappears behind him, but then Cosmo reappears next to him, and they both disappear together. So that was a precarious predicament.
Yes, particularly.
Particularly precarious predicament.
That's right.
Okay, so we go back to the control room. Pidge is saying, Keith and I were in communication right before we got disconnected. It must have been that thing. You said you saw the creature, right? Lance says, oh yeah, face to horrifying face. And Lon says, we just watched that thing take out one of my men in an instant. How did you two manage to escape unscathed?
And I love the way he says, how did you two, as in, you know, you two come across as complete incompetent twits. How did you do it?
In other words, how did Shaggy and Scooby end up escaping from that, right?
So which one's Shaggy and which one's Scooby?
I still think Hunk is got to be more like Shaggy.
Hmm.
Maybe, I don't know. They both like food. Right?
Right, yeah.
But Shaggy was sort of like more of a hippie?
Yeah, I could go for that.
So I don't know, I'm thinking more Hunk as Shaggy and then Lance as Scooby, I don't know.
Yeah, so would Lance do anything for a Lancey snack, I wonder?
We already saw what he does as a dolphin in the fountain, remember, at the space mall?
That's right. Love it.
He was trying to get a coin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So we hear rumbling, and Hunk says, what's happening now? Pidge turns to the screen. She says, the ship's moving, and it's headed towards Lon's base. Keith and Cosmo appear behind them. Hunk says, oh, Keith, good, you're here. There's a monster on the ship. Now, Keith, he doesn't even care about Hunk right now. He's flying right by Hunk.
Right.
He wants Lon to answer something.
Mm-hmm.
So he says to Lon, the base you sent this fleet to plunder, was it Warlord Ranveg's? Lon says, yes, it was. Keith says, unbelievable. Alora says, Keith, what's going on? So Keith gives a little bit of a backstory here on things that have happened.
Mm-hmm.
He says, the creature on this ship is a super weapon designed to destroy the Galra. And only Galra. Lon says, Warlord Ranveg would never create such a thing. Keith says, Ranveg found the creature in the Quantum Abyss and experimented on it with Lotor's quintessence. He trained it to take out his Galran enemies, but he could never control it. The beast couldn't differentiate between adversaries and allies. Lance says, wait, how do you know so much about this super monster weapon thingy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how does he know?
Well, we know that there's a backstory, but I will tell you, I don't remember anything in that prior episode that suggested that the monster went only after Galra. Do you remember anything from that episode?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
So all of this stuff we're hearing for the first time.
Right.
So Keith says, because Crowley and I let it loose so we could escape Ranveg's base. This is all my fault. I'm sorry.
So I wonder if Crowley maybe had a chat with Keith at some point. Yeah, you remember that monster? Well, it was designed only to kill Galra. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it appeared so much because Crowley was the one that really let it loose.
Yeah.
And Keith didn't understand why.
Yep.
When it first happened.
Yeah, so they must have had a chat at some point.
Yeah. So Lon says, it's what you've wanted from the beginning. Something to get rid of the Galra for you. Lance says, I don't know what it's going to take to get through your thick skull, but we're not your enemy. Keith says, Pidge, can you initiate the self-destruct protocol? We need to destroy this ship and the monster along with it, and we need to do it immediately. Pidge says, okay, I'm on it. She touches the console. Once I initiate, we'll have 2 doboshes to exit the ship. Lance says, 2 hours? Isn't that too long? All the others say at the same time, minutes.
Yeah, you know, Lance, what was that one episode where he says he wasn't born yesterquintant? So I guess he still has a few things to learn about Altaian time units.
He's the one that seems to get confused the most on it.
Yeah.
So Lance says, what? That's not enough time. Pitch turns around and says, let's move. And then she runs into Keith because the monster appeared. And it's holding just the head of a sentry now. And the sentry says, all Galra must perish. Then it roars.
Yeah, so now, just like before with Keith, it's talking. The monster is talking through the sentry. So presumably, this monster understands what they're saying enough to figure out, you know, enough to, you know, as it was listening in on Pidge and the communication traffic from that hacked computer earlier, it certainly can interpret and understand what people are saying. And now it's smart enough to hack into a Galra sentry so that it can speak. That's one smart creature.
It's the same way that the aliens from Independence Day grabbed onto one of the humans and was able to talk through the human.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So at this point, the monster roars, lights up purple, and charges towards Lon. Allura uses her lasso Bayard to pull Lon away from the monster. Cosmo bites the monster's face. The monster grabs Cosmo with its tail and Cosmo whimpers. Lance shoots at the monster. Hunk grabs Cosmo and they fly out this door that's closing in on them. Lance shouts, "Come on!" But Lon and Keith aren't able to get out before the door closes. Lance says, "Pidge, how much time before the ship explodes?" Pidge says, 60 ticks. Hunk says, "We've got to get them out of there." Pidge says, "This should do it." She punches up a hologram. The door starts to open but closes. And Pidge says, "That thing overrode my protocol." How is that thing able to do that?
I don't know. Is it still hanging onto the sentry and sending commands to the ship's computer wirelessly through the sentry?
Does it have its hand on the console in the other room?
Yeah, I mean, it presumably has all the time in the world. I mean, it's not like, I mean, the two entities on the ship that it wants most are already in the room with it. The door is locked. You know, maybe it's smart enough to realize, yeah, I can spare a few seconds. I don't know.
Yeah, it's got both of the Galra people in with it.
Mm-hmm.
So Lance says, "We can take it down with our Bayards." Both Hunk and Lance draw their guns. Allura says, "Keith." Lance says, "We're coming for you." Keith and Lon are trying to get the door open from the other side. Hunk says, "Stand away from the door." So they fire on the door many times. Keith dodges the attack from the monster. The monster fires a laser at Lon. Keith pushes him out of the way, then puts up his shield, blocking the laser. Now Lon watches as the monster comes toward him and he says, "Victory or death."
And so what was Lon going to do? I'm serious. I watched that episode thinking, okay, I'm waiting for Lon to do something.
He's got no weapon.
Yeah, I mean, was he basically, I mean, he didn't have a weapon, but was he going to kick it, punch it, tickle it? I don't know.
I think he was more thinking death instead of victory at this point.
Okay, fair enough.
So Keith steps in front of Lon, and he brings up a gun on his Bayard that we've never seen before.
Yeah, brand new.
He fires a laser at the monster. It pushes the monster against the screen and creates this enormous fiery hole. Then Keith turns to Lon and says, "Do you trust me yet?" Lon just narrows his eyes. Now, on the other side of the door, they're still firing at the door. Keith says, "Paladins, clear the hallway. We're coming through." Then using that laser gun he's got, he fires a hole through the door and he and Lon fly through it.
So not only does Keith have a blaster, it outblasts Hunk and Lance's blasters because they had been shooting almost nonstop, seemingly, for quite a while, and the door wouldn't budge. But one blast from Keith's weapon totally obliterates the door.
Yeah. Sounds like Keith's got something those guys don't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What is it? Is it a, you know, he had that power previously where he was able to pull an object to him?
Yeah, was it his Bayard where he could summon it and it would, he had that ability where the thing would disappear or teleport from where the Galra had all the Bayard sort of gathered. And it would reappear in his hand. He could make the Bayard switch hands by teleporting and all that stuff. So Keith's got some special skills.
And he was the only one that was able to kill Macedus when Macedus kept on jumping in and out and in and out and in and out. And then he was able to fire his sword right at the right moment.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
So he's got some skills that the others just don't have.
Yep.
Okay. So the monster recovers enough to fly through that hole that Keith had made. and he goes towards Keith and the others. Pidge's saying, 10 ticks. And Alora says, the cargo bay where we entered is the nearest exit point. Now the monster's getting closer to them. The self-destruct is this happy face of Pidge with the head bobbing back and forth. Did you notice that?
Yeah, every time Pidge hacks anything, they you see that little icon of Pidge's face, kind of like in Jurassic Park, where I forget the character's name, but he played Newman on Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah.
Dennis Nedry. And you'd see that little face, this is the Pidge version.
Right. So Pidge now says, 5 ticks, we'll never make it. Now, using his laser gun, Keith creates a hole in the side of the ship. They all fly through it. Now, this big piece of metal covers the hole, and the monster tries to remove it, but the ship explodes, sends the paladins hurtling through space. Now, using their mouths, the lions catch the paladins.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. And the lions are able to get away as the complete explosion follows.
Yeah, and it's also cool that the Black Lion not only catches Keith, but also Lon. I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, well, yeah, look, each lion caught its paladin. But the Black Lion is in tune with Keith enough to know that Lon matters. So.
Yep, that's absolutely true. So we get back to planet Riker on the Galra base, and Lon is speaking to a large crowd. Do we ever see the crowd?
I don't think so.
I don't think we do.
No.
But anyway, you get the sense that he's talking to a lot of people.
Yeah, all the people who hang out at the base. Now, we did see Galra being, you know, when we talked about seeing different characters sort of tending to the Galra. Did we mention that earlier in the episode? There's a shot where you see Galra sort of gathered together as if they've been not necessarily captured, but they're clustered in groups, and there are some people trying to administer aid to them from the garrison. And I'm trying to remember where that was. I remember noting that when I rewatched the episode, but
that happens in this one.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. So earlier in the episode where they just captured the base.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we talked about it, Olia and a Targaryen and that Unalu.
And Ramel was there, and she was putting a bandage on somebody's head.
Yeah, so that's the closest that we ever get to see to other Galra. Presumably the base has a lot more than just those people.
Right. All right, so here's what Lon says to everybody. The Galra Empire may be decimated, but its warriors are still needed to maintain stability. Twice, the Paladins of Ultron have risked their lives for me, and yet I questioned their intent. I was wrong. I pledged loyalty to a united front with the Voltron Coalition, and I encourage you all to do the same. And the crowd cheers. Now we go to the Atlas Bridge, and they're all there now. And Pidge says, I downloaded some intel from that cruiser. There might be another one of Inerva's beasts out there. Lance says, another one? Alora says, this is just what I feared. Shiro, we need to adjust our mission's objective and track down where these things are coming from. Shiro says, how certain are you that it's a Robeast? Pidge says, I'm not positive, but according to the message log, some Galra have spotted a giant robotic mech that fits the description. The logs even refer to a similar weapon. Alora says, there may be another Altaian piling it. We must investigate. Shiro says, thousands of innocent souls are waiting to be liberated from what remains of the Galra Empire. We can't just change course.
Why not? I mean, I'm sorry, but why not?
Isn't the bigger problem Inerva at this point?
Yeah. I mean, the Galra are tough people. Inerva has a lot of nasty stuff up her sleeve. Yeah, I would think that pursuing her should be the number one priority.
And Shiro, I hate to tell you this. This is our last season. This show's going to be over pretty soon. You need to, we need to step up here.
That's right.
If we want to have another season or another spinoff or sequel or something like that, then we can go ahead and do that then. How about that?
I'm all for that. let's go back in time and tell Shiro this.
Because apparently Pidge and her family are working on a vehicle Voltron.
Oh, that's right.
And they could go on those missions.
That would be really slick.
Yeah.
I would not be averse to watching that. Let's put it that way.
Okay. So Keith says, maybe you don't have to. Shiro says, Keith, what are you saying? Keith says, we'll split up. The Atlas will continue working with the Galra while Voltron searches for Enerva and her beasts. Shiro says, you'll be out there on your own without backup. Keith says, we'll be okay. Voltron is stronger now, more than ever. And the Paladins smile. Now, on Orion, Enerva stands at the entrance of the pyramid in front of a huge mass of Altaians. Two podiums rise up on each side of her. She puts her hands on them and opens up a huge black and purple hole in the sky. As the Altaians watch, one of her robies flies through the wormhole. And that's the end.
Yep. And the Altaians all have these grins on their faces like, yeah.
Go get them.
Go get,
get that Voltron.
Go get Voltron, Lotor's mom.
Yeah. So that was the prisoner's dilemma.
Yes. What'd you think?
Who do you think the prisoner was?
Well, my initial thought was Lon, because Lon is arguably a prisoner of the Paladins, and does he trust them? Does he, you know, continue to oppose them? That is one interpretation. What do you think?
I think that's one interpretation, but you know how they always like to do double meanings in this, right?
Yeah.
So who could be the other prisoner?
I guess you could stretch it a bit and say Keith is a prisoner to his Galra heritage here, because if he had not been half Galra, he wouldn't have had nearly the trouble with the monster that he did. Maybe the monster is a prisoner.
I was thinking more of Ranveig's beast.
Yeah. I feel sorry for that thing. As nasty as it had intelligence.
Yeah, I think Ranveig's beast, you know, being stuck out there on ships that really, for all intents and purposes, weren't able to go anywhere, right?
Yeah.
But somehow, Pitch noticed that ship was on its way to Planet Riker.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he was able to fire up the crystal enough to get it to work, and then finding out where the rest of the Galra were.
Yeah.
So the dilemma there could have been, all right, how do I find out from these people that are now on this ship where the rest of the Galra are? Or the dilemma could have been, how do I get to the rest of the Galra, or something like that?
Yeah. And I got to tell you, this the creature, and maybe we weren't meant to feel sorry for it, because it's clearly this hideous thing. It's done these awful things to many Galra. It's now threatening our heroes, but it has intelligence. It is smart. It is programmed or designed, engineered to kill, but it is a sentient life form. And I'm reminded of the original Star Trek episode called The Mantrap, where this married couple, they were scientists on this remote planet. They found the last of its kind, this creature that a lot of fans nickname it the salt vampire. And it instinctively kills by literally draining the salt out of a person's body. And that's what it feeds on. And so on that level, it acts like a hungry animal. But it also shows intelligence, because it can change its form to look like anyone that it sees. And it can talk and interact. And it clearly has intelligence. And so by the end of that episode, although they are forced to kill it to save the lives of the crew of the Enterprise, it's sad on one level, because this creature did have sentience. And I feel the same way about this one.
Hmm. Yeah.
It had no control over that urge to kill Galra. But it was designed to kill Galra. So it was programmed in a certain way. And yet it was smart enough to find very rational ways to do it. And so it's kind of tragic, I think.
And I kind of think they found the one way to stop it.
Yeah, sadly.
Yeah. So based on what we saw at the end with Enerva and everything, she's well on her way to reaching her goal. So is there any way that Voltron's going to be able to stop that Robeast? Now, we know from the first interaction with that Robeast that they figured out how to stop that Robeast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when that chest plate opens up, that's when it's vulnerable.
Right.
So do you think anything has changed between that first Robeast and this next one, if they ever face it?
Well, I mean, obviously we've seen the entire season.
Yeah.
But if I were to pretend I hadn't.
Right.
then, you know, Enerva did have a telepathic connection with Luca, who had operated the first Robi. So presumably, whatever Luca might have learned about what blew the Robis to bits, Enerva would have learned as well. So it's possible that this Robis was adapted to be resistant. On the other hand, maybe she realizes this thing is powerful enough to help me do what I want. Maybe I don't need to waste my time and re-engineer it. What do you think?
Yeah, it's possible. I kind of got the idea that when they had shown all six of those Robeasts at the same time, that they were all the same.
Yeah, yeah, I had the same thought.
Okay. All right, so what did you think of this episode?
I loved it. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, it was another one of those scary type episodes. You got the sense that there was a lot of fear going on that ship. You know, people not knowing what had happened, and then finding this monster of a beast.
Yeah, it's creepy. I still believe that the first eight episodes of this season, I would put against just about any episode of any other season. I really think that as individual episodes, the first eight episodes are really, really good stuff.
Yeah. So this fits right in there. I mean, so far we've gotten through the initial launch date. It was a little bit lighter, but towards the end there, we saw with Luca, you know, what Enerva was willing to do in order for them not to find out what her plans were.
Right.
And then going to the second one, where we got all the backstory on what happened between Enerva and Lotor and Zarkon and the original Paladins and stuff like that.
Right.
It was really interesting then to go into this, where we're back to our original Paladins again, because we didn't see them at all in the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then to see the Atlas and the Voltron working together to, you know, at the beginning, at least during the first, you know, 25% of this, it was taking over Lon's base and then trying to get his support.
Right.
But then, you know, finding out that something else had happened to some of his other ships. And then by going through that whole thing with Ranveig's beast, that's how they ended up getting the support of Lon.
Yeah, it was just winning the respect through combat, which and showing strength and yet compassion. So you gain a Gaura warrior's respect by showing your capability in combat. And really, this is Keith's more than anyone's, of course. So Lon didn't like and perhaps despised Keith for being a half-breed, got to see just how tough he was and yet how compassionate he was. So he got to see what impressed him the most, you know, his skill as a warrior, and he also got a peek at what life beyond victory or death could be like.
And it's kind of funny, because the first time they met Lon, it was when the Omega Shield episode, and that time it was Hunk was the one who was using all of his training that he had gotten from Dayak and using it in battle with the Galra.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, being able to inspire them with his knowledge of Galra.
Right.
And then, you know, here we come. Lon had never met Keith before, and now he finds out what Keith has to contribute to the Galra as well.
Right. And we now see, yeah, two Paladins who have shown that they can effectively lead when, you know, when the circumstances warrant, lead a group of people, Galra and otherwise, to victory. And they are also demonstrating non-Galra traits. They're traits that you don't typically think of a strong Galra, showing compassion and understanding for others. And so Lon has come around, but it took a couple tries.
Yeah. And of course, we saw Keith's new weapon.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. Yeah. So all in all, a good episode. And we're looking forward to the rest of this season through this.
Yep.
So next time, what do we have up?
Battle Scars.
Battle Scars.
Yes.
Okay, so next up we have Battle Scars. So I'm looking forward to some Battle Scars.
All right. and for, hopefully none on either of us.
Yeah, and hopefully not on the face. Please, not the face.
Yeah. Fun stuff. Enjoyed reviewing this episode with you, Mark, and I hope our listeners enjoyed our walkthrough of this episode.
Right. And we want to thank you guys for joining us along for our Season 8 episode reviews. We will have some other guests with us coming up soon, and maybe some other artists, and maybe some other, you know, people that are surprise guests as well.
Yep.
So we're looking forward to more of these episodes coming up. So thank you for joining us on Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. And we'll see you all next time on
Let's Voltron!